Heaven Help Us by Bexlus, read by Ethel. Fandom, My Chemical Romance. Pairing, Frank Gerard and Ray Mikey. Frank had never been on a plane before, and so far he hated it. His legs were cramping from being folded up for so long. The air tasted stale and recycled, and the pillow he was supposed to sleep on was smaller than any human head, he was pretty sure. Even worse was the fact that nobody else seemed to have a problem sleeping at all. Not Ray with his freakishly long legs, or Bob and his giant head. Even Mikey was slumped in the seat next to Frank with his eyes closed and his mouth open. The only person apart from Frank who was still awake was the annoying dude a few rows back who kept coughing every 7 seconds. Well, and the pilot, Frank hoped anyway. Frank sighed and readjusted the stupid tiny pillow for the umpteenth time. It was so quiet on the plane, with everyone sleeping. Frank was totally alone with his thoughts, which was the absolute last place he wanted to be. Every time he let his inner guard down and tried to relax or breathe or tell himself to be patient or something, he would immediately flash back to Gerard lying in Mikey's arms, or the look on Brian's face when the suits took the body away, or the way Frank had spoken to Gerard the night before. Frank swallowed sharply and shook his head, warding off the memory. He rubbed his hands over his face, which didn't help because every time he closed his eyes, he saw Gerard's face. He tipped his head back against the seat and stared at the ceiling instead, resigning himself to wakefulness. I slept with Toro. Frank startled, turning to Mikey, who had cracked one eye open and rolled it slightly in Frank's direction, peering out at him from under the lid. What? Said Frank. Toro, Mikey repeated, opening the other eye and turning his head all the way toward Frank. I slept with him. Frank stared. When? Mikey frowned slightly. Like, yesterday? Maybe the day before. I don't remember. Frank could relate. He actually felt like it was still the same day it had been when Gerard died. We kissed before, Mikey continued, when you and G were fighting. Frank winced. He couldn't think about that at all. He couldn't think about it, or he would just throw himself out of the plane. Instead, he looked across to where Ray was asleep in the aisle seat. He didn't really know what to say. None of his usual responses to one of Mikey's sex stories seemed appropriate. He hesitated, then asked, "Was it just because you're sad?" "I don't know." Mikey lifted one shoulder. "I honestly can't tell." "Shit." Frank sat back in his seat. He made himself think about the way Ray was, how he'd gone to work early every morning at the shop so Mikey could get his hair done, how worried he'd been when Mikey met Pete, the way his face looked when Mikey made him laugh. "Shit," he said again, realization dawning. "Toro's into you. Of course he is. How the fuck did I miss that?" Mikey shrugged the other shoulder. "Same way the other guys missed you and G, I guess." Frank didn't know what to say to that. He looked down at his lap and rubbed his thumb over Gerard's rosary, wrapped around his wrist. "We're supposed to be able to trust each other with our lives," Mikey said. Frank looked up, but Mikey was staring straight ahead, his jaw set. "And then we don't tell each other shit." "But you knew," Frank said. "I didn't think..." "Mikey, you knew." Mikey shook his head. "That's not the point." Frank knew he was right, but he didn't know how to explain it. The things he'd kept to himself, the secret conversations, the nights he'd forced himself to stay awake just so they could talk when nobody else was listening. He hadn't hidden them just because he knew Mikey would be pissed. It was because they were the only things of Gerard that Frank had all to himself, the only time Frank got something from Gerard that nobody else did. He said honestly, "I thought Gerard would tell you." "Yeah, well..." Mikey pushed his fingers under his glasses and rubbed his eyes. "He didn't." Frank was secretly glad. He looked out of the window so Mikey wouldn't see it in his face. He moved the rosary around his wrist. Eventually, Mikey said, "I don't think it is. Just because I'm sad, I mean." Frank looked at him. He pressed his foot against Mikey's. When Mikey pressed back, Frank said, "Then you should tell him." "I don't know." Mikey shifted in his seat, rolling his shoulders. I don't even really feel like a person," he admitted, shooting Frank a wary, sideways glance. "Do you know what I mean?"
"I know exactly," said Frank, wishing he didn't.
"Yeah." Mikey closed his eyes for a moment, then scooted down in his seat and put his head on Frank's shoulder. Frank turned toward him, resting his cheek on the top of Mikey's head. It was still really quiet on the plane. Frank felt like his whisper was really loud when he asked Mikey the question he was afraid to hear the answer to, but couldn't keep to himself.
"Mikey, do you think he's alive?"
Mikey was quiet for a long time before he said, "I don't know." It wasn't the answer Frank wanted, but it was the best he was going to get. He closed his eyes and tried to sleep. The airport was loud and crazy and full of people yelling in Italian. Frank pretty much just grabbed onto the back of Brian's jacket and held on for dear life until he found himself being herded toward a dude in sunglasses who was holding a sign that said, "M. Way." Said Mikey when they got close enough. "That's me, I guess." The dude, he wasn't a suit, which Frank was kind of surprised by. Somehow in Frank's head, all Vatican employees looked like they'd jumped out of the Matrix. Kind of looked Mikey up and down, then nodded and walked off quickly in the opposite direction. "Come on," Brian urged, jogging Frank's elbow. "He's our ride." Outside the airport was another dude in sunglasses, and two shiny black cars, the kind Frank had only ever ridden in for funerals. He wasn't that crazy about getting in, especially when he realized they wouldn't all fit in the same one.
"I thought we agreed to stay together no matter what," Bob hissed.
Frank nodded hard.
"You want to sit on my lap, Briar? Be my guest," said Brian.
"You ride with Ray and Mikey, okay? Frank's with me." Bob looked unsure, but he nodded. Over his shoulder, Frank could see Ray's hand low down on Mikey's back, guiding him toward the car.
"I feel like I'm in a dream," Brian confided to Frank when they were pulling out of the airport.
"Don't tell me that, dude," Frank said. "You're supposed to be the one who knows what he's doing." Brian kind of laughed.
"Right," he said quietly.
He heaved his bag onto his lap and started rifling through it, probably checking he had all their passports for the 90th time since they got off the plane.
"Do you know if there's, like, another border patrol at the Vatican? It's technically its own country, right?"
"I don't know," Frank shrugged. "I mean, it is, I think, but I don't know about passports and stuff."
"I guess we'll find out when we get there." Brian moved more shit around in his bag and frowned.
"Shit, I forgot to buy an adapter. Now we can't charge our phones."
"So we'll buy one," Frank told him.
"Brian, we're in Rome. It's not exactly a backwater." Brian kind of hesitated, then deflated a little. He worried the strap of his bag in his hand.
"I just wish we could do something," he said. "I feel like there's nothing I can do for you."
"Don't worry about me," Frank flapped his hand at Brian. "Worry about Mikey."
"I worry about all of you," said Brian.
He sat back in his seat and looked out the window. The ride to Vatican City was completely uneventful, although Frank was absolutely incapable of stopping himself turning around every 2 seconds to make sure the other car was still behind them. He caught Brian doing it a bunch of times, too. When they finally arrived, they were met by a small, bespectacled man in neat robes who introduced himself as Cardinal Pierce's assistant. He led them down a maze of hallways, then opened a door which led to what could easily have been a suite in a nice hotel. Clearly, there was no expense being spared at the Vatican, Frank thought.
"We hope you will find these rooms comfortable," the assistant said.
"You must be tired from your journey. You will rest tonight. The Cardinal wishes to meet with you first thing after Mass tomorrow morning."
"Tomorrow?"
Brian shook his head. "The guy just dragged us halfway across the world with no explanation, and he thinks we're going to wait until tomorrow? We want to see him now." The assistant turned his cool, even gaze on Brian. "You are tired from your journey," he said firmly. "Food will be brought shortly. You will meet with the cardinal in the morning." He nodded once and closed the door on his way out.
"Well," said Bob to the door, "I guess that's that."
"I can't believe they're just going to leave us hanging overnight," Ray said after they'd eaten. He was sitting on the floor with his back against the wall, knees drawn up to his chest. "I mean, seriously, unforeseen circumstances? What does that even mean?"
"What if he didn't really die and he's just sick or something?" said Mikey suddenly. "What if they realized he was still alive on the way here?"
"I don't understand why they wouldn't have taken us straight to him," Brian said gently, "if that were the case."
"What if..." Bob started, and then cut himself off. He hunched his shoulders and shook his head. "Never mind."
Mikey looked at him.
"What?"
Bob hesitated, then said,
"You don't want to hear it."
"Probably all the more reason for you to say it, dude," Frank said, getting ready to move closer to Mikey just in case. Bob didn't look happy about it, but he took a deep breath and said,
"What if it isn't really about Gerard? What if they just wanted to get us here because they know that we know more than we should? About, like..."
Bob waved his hand around in a way that was obviously meant to indicate the entire inner workings of the Catholic Church.
"What if it's a trap?"
"No," Frank said. "Gerard would have warned us."
"Okay," said Bob.
"Yeah, no, he would have." They lapsed into silence again. There was nothing to say except why and what if, and none of them had any answers. The chair Frank was sitting on was seriously uncomfortable, and he fidgeted ceaselessly until finally Brian said, "Frankie, did you sleep at all on the plane?"
"No," Frank sighed. "I can't sleep sitting up."
"That's a damned lie," said Ray, smiling a little bit. "You could sleep standing on your head." Frank made the effort to curl one corner of his mouth in response.
"Why don't you lie down?" Brian suggested. "Even if you can just doze a little."
"I'm fine," Frank protested. Brian made a stern face. "You are not. You look like you're going to pass out. The last thing we need is for you to get sick." The thing was that Frank totally was tired. He was just afraid to be by himself in a room with nothing but his guilt for company. He let Brian usher him into an adjoining room, though, and curled up on one of the beds. "We'll wake you if anything happens," Brian promised him, and then pulled the door closed. It was warm in the room, but Frank tugged the covers up around his ears anyway, bundling himself up inside them. The food, which hadn't tasted like anything while he was eating it, was suddenly heavy and sullen inside his stomach, protesting every movement. The quiet and the dark seemed depressive and accusatory, and Frank pulled one hand out from under the covers so he could unwind Gerard's rosary from around his wrist. He caught it between his fingers instead, holding the first bead between his thumb and forefinger. Each bead was carved with tiny roses, twisting around in a pattern like vines, and Frank held it close to his face so he could make it out in the darkness and follow the path with his eyes. Frank had never used it to actually pray a rosary, but he liked counting the beads, testing them one by one to make sure they weren't loose or cracked or damaged at all. He had to concentrate in the darkness, too, and fight against his own drowsy eyes, so there was no room in his thoughts for anything else. He started off counting them individually, then in fives, then tens, then individually again, and at some point he must have dozed off, despite himself, because the next thing he knew, he was sitting bolt upright in bed, with his hands pressed over his chest, where he could feel his heart banging like it was trying to get out. "Bad dream," he said to himself, taking a deep breath, and then another. "Just a bad dream." He couldn't remember it, but he felt the familiar, sickly unease lingering down his spine and in the back of his throat. He was glad he couldn't remember it. Lately, Frank's dreams were something he tried to avoid. Frank ran his hands over the bed, looking for the rosary. When he couldn't find it, he kicked the covers off and slipped out of bed, fumbling to switch on the lamp on the nightstand. The rosary was lying on the floor, and Frank knelt on the rug to pick it up carefully, making sure he hadn't broken it in his sleep. The light from the lamp was fairly dim, but warm enough for Frank to look around the room.
There was a low dresser running along one wall, and in the corner was a small table with a picture of the Virgin Mary hanging on the wall above it. It was Frank's favorite kind of icon, the kind where she looked sad but calm. He shuffled closer on his knees so he could see where the details were picked out in gold. The cross around her neck, the halo illuminating her plain, beautiful face. He found himself wondering if she knew what they were going through, if she cared, if she knew how sorry Frank was, if she would forgive him, if she knew where Gerard was, if he was safe, if he was with her, if she would give him back, if Frank promised to be better. He knelt there for a long time, just looking up at her. Then there was a click, and a slice of brighter light fell across the wall. Frank turned around to see Brian standing uncertainly in the doorway. "I heard your voice," he said hesitantly, eyes skipping from Frank's hands up to the icon of Mary on the wall. "Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt." "I wasn't," Frank started, feeling unaccountably guilty, like Brian had just caught him doing something he shouldn't have done. He looked down at his own hands, clutching the rosary, and up at Mary, and then back down at himself, on his knees on the floor. "Oh," he said, "I guess I was." He met Brian's eyes and lifted his chin a little. Whatever, Frank hadn't done anything wrong. What was Brian going to do, give him shit for it? Brian hesitated another second, then came into the room and closed the door behind him. He came over to stand next to Frank. "You mind some company?" Frank shrugged, hitching his shoulder up. "Be my guest." Brian knelt, crossing himself quickly. He folded his hands in his lap and closed his eyes, head bowed. Frank watched him for a minute. It was weird. All the times they'd been to church over the last year, it had never occurred to him that anyone other than Gerard was actually doing any praying. Brian cracked one eye open. "This isn't a spectator sport." "Sorry," Frank said immediately, turning back to Mary and her unchanging expression. Maybe that was the appeal, he thought. You could say anything you wanted and never get looked at like you were crazy, or a terrible person, or both. In the morning, they didn't have to wait long. Someone brought more food, and then the assistant appeared. "The Cardinal will see you now," he said when Bob opened the door. "You will follow me." "What's all this you will shit?" Bob whispered to Frank as they followed the assistant down endless winding hallways, each one indistinguishable from the last. "It's like we signed all our rights away at the door."
"Bob," Ray murmured, "remember we talked about how not to be reassuring?"
They turned another corner, and then the assistant came to a halt in front of a tall double door, dark wood with handles that looked like gold. He knocked twice, and after a minute there was a soft reply from inside. The assistant opened the door, said something in Italian that Frank didn't understand, then stood back, sweeping his arm out to the side. "After you," he said. They all paused for a second, then Brian marched into the room, the rest of them trailing after him. They found themselves standing in a room unlike any Frank had ever been in before. The high ceiling, the deep red drapes that swept all the way to the floor, the wide polished desk and the spindle-legged chairs with their plush upholstery, all of it screamed, "Vow of poverty, my ass!" "Mr. Way," said a voice, and they turned to see a man in red robes standing by the bookcases that lined the other side of the room. "My name is Cardinal Pierce." The Cardinal was tall and fairly elderly, which Frank was expecting. He was American, though, which Frank was not. He had a narrow, kindly face and white hair, and he didn't look like he was going to throw them in Vatican prison or anything. He came forward and stretched his hand out to Mikey. When Mikey took it, the Cardinal placed his other hand over the back of Mikey's. "Thank you for coming," he said. "I know this is a very difficult time for you." He released Mikey's hand and turned to Brian. "Mr. Schechter," he said, shaking Brian's hand and then addressing the rest of them in turn. "Mr. Toro, Mr. Breyer, and you," he said finally, turning to Frank, "must be Mr. Aiero." Frank shook the Cardinal's hand when he offered it. "Must I?" he said warily. The Cardinal smiled a little bit. "Father Way thought a lot of you, all of you,"
he said, letting go of Frank's hand and turning to include the other guys in his address. I should very much have liked to meet you under different circumstances. Frank should very much have liked to know how the fuck he knew what they all looked like, but he just nodded and took a step closer to Mikey. Please, said the cardinal, moving around his desk. Take a seat. That will be all, Antonio. Grazie. The assistant nodded and closed the doors. I imagine, said the cardinal, once they were all seated, that you were all wondering why I asked you to come.
You could say that, Brian said dryly.
Is my brother alive? Mikey burst out suddenly, leaning forward in his chair. Is that why we're here? The cardinal's face fell a little, and he shook his head. I'm afraid I have no such good news for you, he said sorrowfully, and I'm sorry that I couldn't say more on the phone.
You're not on the phone now, Frank said, losing patience. Start talking.
Frank, Ray said warningly, but the cardinal waved his hand. Your friend is quite right, he said, so let me tell you what happened. When my associates arrived at the scene of the events in Chicago...
You mean Howard and those guys? Mikey interrupted.
The cardinal nodded. Father Wei's body was removed and transported immediately to the airport, where it was loaded onto a private plane that took off within minutes. On arrival in Rome, Father Wei's body was brought straight here, where it was scheduled for immediate examination. Frank really wished the cardinal would stop referring to Gerard as a body, as it. He hated the thought of it. Gerard cold and all alone, locked in a coffin, getting carted around like a piece of meat. It made it seem like he was really dead. At no point, the cardinal was saying, was the body attended by anyone other than Howard and his colleagues.
If you've brought us here just to brag about your awesome dead body transportation, Bob began, shutting up when Brian threw him a sharp glance.
What I am trying to tell you, the cardinal went on, is that Father Wei's body was never left alone, not for 1 second between Chicago and the Vatican. However, when the capsule was opened up so the examination could begin, it was found to be empty. Frank blinked and looked at Mikey, who was staring with giant eyes. It would seem, the cardinal finished, that Father Wei's body has disappeared. There was a silence. Eventually, Bob said,
What the fuck?
Yes, said the cardinal, quite.
Frank sat back in his chair, stunned. He turned to see the other guys doing the same, and they just stared helplessly at each other for a minute. For all the what-ifs they'd thrown at each other over the last 24 hours, this particular scenario had somehow never come up. The cardinal pressed a button on his phone, and a second later the door opened and a young woman entered, carrying a tray of what smelled like really awesome coffee.
Grazie, Cesca, said the cardinal, and the young woman nodded before slipping out of the room.
The cardinal rose up from his seat and pushed the plunger on the cafetiere. I know that your grief is still raw, he said quietly, not looking at any of them, and it is not my wish to upset any of you further, but I hoped you might be able to help us solve this mystery.
What can we do? Mikey said immediately.
The cardinal started pouring coffee into the cups on the tray. Ray leaned forward to help him pass them out.
You can tell me everything you know about Father Wei's last days, the case in Chicago, the people involved, anything he might have said to you, any events in his personal life, anything at all. We were able to piece together most of the information from a notebook Howard removed from Father Wei's pocket at the scene, but obviously we're missing something.
Wait a minute, said Ray, frowning. You think we know what happened to Gerard's body? With all due respect, sir, we're not the ones who are stingy with the information.
That's as may be, the cardinal allowed, setting a jug of cream and a bowl of sugar lumps out on his desk, like the world's weirdest tea party. But I believe in this instance you may hold the key without realizing it. So will you help us?
Of course, Brian answered for all of them. Anything we can do to help the father, we will.
The cardinal settled back in his chair. Thank you, he said, stirring some sugar into his coffee.
He brought it up to his face and sipped, delicately. In your own time. Frank was starting to panic a little bit. He wanted to help, he did. But were they really going to tell the Cardinal everything? The events in Gerard's personal life leading up to his death were pretty much Frank. And while Frank might not be on board with the Vatican's whole team homophobia thing, he also wasn't about to go posthumously outing Gerard to his boss. He tried to telegraph that to Mikey with his eyebrows. Mikey turned to Brian, who dropped his eyelids at Frank a little bit, like, "Let me do the talking." Frank sat back in his chair and tried to stay calm. Brian started with the end of their last job, the one with the runes and the exploding sacred flame thing. That was when they'd had the assignment to go to Chicago, so he told the Cardinal about how their van had died on the way, and how they met Pete and he'd offered them a ride. "I see," the Cardinal nodded. "And Father Wei knew immediately that Mr. Wentz was involved in that case somehow?" "No," Ray put in. "Actually, that was Mikey." The Cardinal turned his eyes on Mikey and looked at him for a long moment. "I see." Mikey shifted a little in his chair, not meeting anyone's eyes. Brian went on, relaying the tale of Danny and Mark, of Pete's exhaustion, how they'd found the ball thing. A sphera, the Cardinal said it was called, with the symbols on it. He somehow managed to leave a bunch of stuff out without ever really lying, although when it came to the night before Gerard's death, he admitted, You should probably know that Frank and the father were fighting." The Cardinal raised an eyebrow at Frank. "Might I ask the cause of your disagreement?" Frank glanced at Mikey, who shrugged. Frank said, "Let's just say I have a few problems with company policy." "Anyway," Brian said quickly. He went on with the story, all the way up to Gerard switching places with Frank at the last minute. "He hit you?" The Cardinal looked surprised for the first time all morning. "That seems a little out of character for Father Wei." "You're telling me," said Frank. His cheekbone was still a little tender, actually, but there wasn't a bruise or anything. If Frank had been expecting the punch, it probably wouldn't have even knocked him off his feet. He pressed his fingers under his eye, remembering. He didn't mind that it hurt. "And then Howard and those guys showed up," Brian went on. "And it seemed like a lot of those people with the ball things, spheres, got away. But then Howard did something so the fans wouldn't remember it." Mikey frowned. "I don't remember any of this." "You were kind of out of it," Ray told him. He covered Mikey's hand with his own. "Out of it" was kind of an understatement. Mikey hadn't even seemed like he knew he was still breathing until the next day. Frank wasn't exactly clear on what had happened right after Gerard died either, but he remembered that the suits were there for a long time, that it didn't seem to go nearly as smoothly as it usually did when they were around. Mostly he just remembered it was chaos. "Wait a minute," said Bob, leaning forward. "Some of those people with the spheres got away, but not all of them. Your guys bring people here, right? People who do bad stuff? They must know something about Gerard's body. Why don't you interrogate them?" "We have," the Cardinal said, nodding, "but so far they are disturbingly silent on the matter, and as we do not condone violence or torture, there is only so much we can do." "But you must be able to make them talk," Mikey protested. The Cardinal spread his hands. "Usually we don't have to. A particular personality trait of the kind of individual we deal with is immense pride, huge arrogance. Usually they can't wait to tell us what they did, and how they did it. It is extremely rare that this many people are working together. And it would seem they have taken a vow of silence on the matter."
"Give me 5 minutes in a room with one of them," Bob said grimly, "and there'll be no damn vow." "Seriously," said Frank. Just the thought of coming face to face with one of those motherfuckers made Frank's hands ball into fists.
"That won't be necessary," said the Cardinal. "The best way for you to help us is with information."
"But that's all we have," Ray said anxiously. "Brian just told you everything we know."
The Cardinal looked at them all in turn, silently. Frank fidgeted in his seat when it was his turn. It was like the dude could see right into his brain, seriously.
Eventually, the cardinal said, "All right. I have another meeting this afternoon. But I would be very pleased if you would dine with me this evening. Antonio will come to your rooms." It obviously wasn't a request, so there was no point in trying to decline. "I know I don't need to impress upon you how important it is that you speak to nobody but me about these events," the cardinal said as they stood up to leave. "This is an extremely delicate matter." "My brother's dead," Mikey told him. "You don't need to tell me anything except where the hell his body is." The cardinal nodded. On cue, Antonio appeared, ready to escort them back to their rooms. "Oh, and gentlemen," the cardinal called after them, "I would recommend you stay within Vatican City limits while this investigation is ongoing. For your own safety, you understand." "I understand exactly nothing," Frank said under his breath to Mikey, as they followed Antonio back through the winding hallway maze. "Except that this is creepy as hell." Mikey didn't reply, though, and as soon as they got back to their quarters, he went straight into the other room and closed the door behind them. "I think he was still hoping they were just going to say G was still alive," Frank said, starting toward the door. Then he stopped and turned around slowly and looked at Ray. "Hey, Toro, why don't you see if he's okay?" Ray blinked in surprise. "Are you sure?" "Yeah." Frank made himself step back, even though the urge to run in there was really strong. "Just come get me if he asks?" "Of course." Ray rubbed his hands nervously against his jeans, threw kind of a shifty glance at Bob and Brian, then went inside, closing the door gently behind him. Bob looked at Frank. "What was that about?" It wasn't for Frank to tell, though, so he just shrugged and went to look out the window. Watching the people around outside made him realize how restless he was feeling. When it became clear that Ray had the Mikey situation under control, Frank said, "He only said we had to stay in Vatican City, right? Not the rooms." "I don't think we're prisoners, Frankie," Brian said absently. He was digging in his bag again. "Go for a walk if you want to." They might not be prisoners, but Frank still trusted the Vatican exactly not at all. And he wasn't afraid to admit he didn't want to go wandering around by himself. He jerked his chin at Bob. "You want to come with?" Bob nodded. "Fuck yeah. Schechter?" Brian waved them off. "I'm looking for something. Take your phones." When they made it outside, Bob slung his arm around Frank's shoulders. "How are you doing?" he wanted to know. "Really?" "Shitty," Frank said honestly. Bob squeezed the back of his neck. "He's still dead." "Yeah." Bob rubbed his shoulders a little before letting go. "Shitty's right." Frank thought, not for the first time, that Bob was the best person in the world to have around when you really didn't want to talk about it. He let you know that he gave a shit, but he didn't get all in your face about it. There were super long lines of noisy tourists waiting to get inside the Sistine Chapel and places like that. But that was okay, because Frank didn't feel like looking at a bunch of religious art anyway. He was content, or as content as he could be, to walk around with Bob and wonder about the time Gerard had spent in the Vatican, whether he'd walked down that alley or sat on those steps. He didn't know what the fuck he was supposed to think about Gerard's body going missing. Maybe it wasn't true. Maybe the cardinal was just messing with them. But he really didn't seem like a jerk. And besides, what could he possibly have to gain? The only explanation Frank could come up with was that the suits had done something with Gerard's body before they arrived in Rome. But he wasn't quite ready to start throwing around accusations of an inside job. In a strange way he would never admit to anyone else, he was kind of glad he had something to think about apart from what an asshole he'd been and how he could never tell Gerard he was sorry. Frank wasn't big on guilt, usually, but this was eating him alive, as if the regret was a physical symptom, a virus taking over his nervous system. And there were other feelings underneath the remorse, too, like how furious he was at Gerard for doing such a stupid fucking thing, and the painful sympathy he felt for Mikey. And then there was the constant ragged ache of missing Gerard.
Frank would take confusion over that combo any day of the week. Somehow they found themselves in a kind of covered walkway, away from all the crowds. Bob wandered off to look at the inscriptions in one of the columns, and Frank stayed where he was, leaning against a pillar and watching a guy in a green jumpsuit prune some hedges a few yards away. He looked like kind of a hippie for a Vatican gardener, Frank thought idly. He had long gray hair held back in a ponytail, and Frank was pretty sure he could even see the splash of tattoos on his forearms, peeking out from the guy's sleeves. He looked familiar somehow. He reminded Frank of some of the dudes his dad hung out with, maybe. Or it could have been someone who used to come into the shop. Or maybe he just looked like one of those decrepit dudes Frank would sometimes see at shows, and think he wanted to be exactly like that when he was old. Frank leaned forward a little, squinting in the sunlight. The dude really did look familiar, and when he turned toward Frank to pick up a different tool, Frank's whole stomach bottomed out and he had to grab onto the pillar so he could stay upright. The guy in the green jumpsuit was Luke. "No," Frank muttered under his breath, squeezing his eyes shut and shaking his head. He was dreaming, or it was a trick of the light. He was just sleep-deprived. It couldn't be. But when he opened his eyes, Luke was still there. No. Frank. Bob was there suddenly, touching Frank's face. What is it? Are you okay? Frank couldn't even speak. He couldn't move. All he could do was stare at Luke and feel the tidal wave of fear crash through him, making his ears ring and his mouth fill up with sourness. Bob followed the line of his eyes, though, and Frank could tell when he got it, because he immediately stepped in front of Frank, turning Frank around with his hands firmly on Frank's shoulders. "He hasn't seen you," he said calmly. "He doesn't know we're here. We're just going to walk away quietly, and you're going to stay in front of me the whole time, okay?" Frank nodded dumbly, and Bob urged him forwards a few paces. Frank's legs wouldn't work at first, and he stumbled, but Bob held him steady. Frank made himself put one foot in front of the other, and it was all going to plan until he suddenly wasn't afraid anymore. He was just fucking mad as hell. "Hey!" he yelled, wrenching himself free of Bob's grip and heading quickly back toward Luke. Bob grabbed for him, and he was strong, but Frank was fast, and he dodged and picked up the pace to a run. Hey, you! Luke looked up as Frank approached, frowning slightly, and cried out when Frank slammed into him, sending him sprawling down onto the floor. "Get up!" Frank yelled, reaching down and yanking Luke to his feet when he just lay there staring. "What the fuck are you doing here, asshole? You do a little gardening for them when you're not busy bleeding innocent people to death? Is that it?" "Take it easy, Frank," Bob warned when he caught up. "Don't get too close." "Answer me!" Frank yelled, ignoring Bob and grabbing Luke so he could shake him hard. "Answer me, you fuck! Do you work for them? Is this some kind of a game? Give me some fucking answers!" "I don't know you!" Luke cried in a high, frightened voice. "Please, I don't know you!" "Don't know me?" Frank had had fucking enough of this bullshit already. And he punched Luke in the jaw as hard as he could, gleeful when Luke doubled over, cradling his face in both hands. "Do you know me now, motherfucker?" Luke shook his head hard, backing away and holding one hand out to ward Frank off. "Please, I don't, I'm sorry." Frank shoved Luke back against the hedges and held him there with one hand, using the other to yank up his sleeves. "Maybe this can jog your memory," he hissed, shoving his wrists in Luke's face. He reached up and pushed his hair away from his forehead. "Or how about this? You don't remember that? You don't remember me lying on your table bleeding while you tried to choke my friend to death?" "Please," Luke was cowering now, his hands held up in front of his face. "I don't know what you're talking about. I promise you I don't." "Frank," said Bob, grabbing Frank's arm when he pulled it back to throw another punch. "I think he's telling the truth." "What?" Frank shook Bob off and stared at him. "Bob, this is the guy. You don't remember his face?" Bob scowled. "Like I could forget it? I'm saying he obviously has no clue who you are." "I don't," Luke insisted, turning to Bob. "Please, I don't. Please don't let him hit me again." "I should let him do a lot worse than that," Bob snapped.
but he pulled Frank back a little way and spoke into his ear. "We don't want him running off and telling someone you just laid into him. The last thing we need is the Swiss guard on our ass."
"I won't tell anyone," Luke promised in his trembling, reedy voice.
He was a lot smaller than Frank remembered, actually, and he looked pretty old.
"I won't. Just please, whatever I've done to you, I'm sorry, but I don't remember."
Frank glared at him. "If this is a trick," he warned, "I am going to rip your face off with my hands."
"Frank," Bob repeated, turning Frank forcibly around to look at him.
"We'll bring it up with the Cardinal, okay? I'm on your side, but this isn't the way." Frank was so angry, he felt like he was going to throw up. He wasn't aware of them walking back to their rooms at all, only really coming back to himself when Bob told them what had happened and Frank heard Ray say,
"What?"
"Oh my God." Mikey scrambled up off the couch and ran over to Frank, lifting his hands up and inspecting his wrists anxiously. "Are you okay? Did he hurt you?"
"I'm fine," Frank told him, forcing himself to unclench his jaw and meet Mikey's eyes. "I'm okay. He didn't do anything."
"Frank pretty much flattened Luke's face out for him, though," Bob said, sounding half proud and half annoyed. "You should have seen him. I thought he was going to kill the guy."
"Thank God you were there to stop him," Brian said, nudging Mikey aside so he could check Frank over for himself. "Crazy American beats Vatican gardener to death isn't a headline we need."
"What would you have done?" Frank challenged him, scowling when Brian moved his hair aside to check his forehead. Brian frowned, then patted Frank's hair down and stepped back.
"I don't know. Probably fed him his rake."
"This is fucked up," Ray said furiously. "What the fuck is he even doing here?"
"Evidently the Vatican's rehabilitation program includes topiary," said Bob.
"What if he followed you?" Mikey said fretfully. "What if he comes up here?"
Frank touched Mikey's hand, shaking his head.
"Much as I hate to admit it, dude, I really think he didn't remember me. I just don't know why."
"We still have a few hours before we see the Cardinal again." Brian moved over to the table, where he'd spread out what looked like the entire contents of all their bags.
"Okay, we know the father wrote a lot of stuff down in his unicorn notebook."
"It's my unicorn notebook," Mikey reminded them all.
"Which the Cardinal has," Ray put in.
Brian nodded. "Right. But I think we know most of what's in there anyway. I wasn't sure what to bring with us. I mean, I didn't exactly have long to pack, and the father has a lot of shit, but I thought maybe we could go through what I have and see if there's anything we missed."
"I wish I'd been able to bring my kit with me," Ray said glumly as he sat down at the table. "I feel useless."
"Yeah, well, good luck trying to get that shit through customs." Bob locked the door to their room and, after a moment's hesitation, set a chair under the doorknob.
"Just in case," he mumbled, when Frank gave him a look.
"Okay," said Brian when they were all settled. "Here's a list of things we don't know. 1, what the second symbol on the sphera means. 2, who the people behind the whole soul-sucking thing are. What they want, whether or not they have Danny and Mark. And if they have anything to do with the father's body going missing. 3, what the fuck Luke is doing here, why he doesn't remember you, and finally, whether or not the entire Vatican is evil and planning to kill us."
"I think," said Frank, "it might be quicker to make a list of things we do know."
Ray and Mikey exchanged a glance. Then Ray said, "Mikey has something to tell us." Mikey kind of nodded, and he opened his mouth, but then closed it again and looked down, wringing his hands.
"It's okay," Ray murmured to him. "Everyone's going to listen."
Mikey hesitated another second, threw Frank a weirdly apologetic glance, then blurted out, "I think Gerard isn't dead. That's why I was upset after we saw the Cardinal. And I know," he hurried on before any of them had time to respond, "I know you're going to say that I just don't want him to be, and it's true, I don't. But I feel like if he was really dead, that I would know, like I would really feel it, and I don't. I haven't felt it since we got here. I feel like he's hiding, or something."
Brian leaned forward, looking seriously at Mikey. "Why would he hide from us?"
"I don't know," Mikey said, uncomfortably, hugging himself.
Maybe he doesn't know we're here. Do you think the Cardinal's hiding him? Bob wanted to know.
No. Mikey shook his head. I mean, he definitely wasn't telling us everything. But I don't think he was lying to us, either.
Bob sat back in his seat, frowning. Frank watched Mikey look around the table and the way his shoulders turned in when none of them said anything.
I told you they'd think it was stupid, he muttered to Ray.
I don't, Frank said. Mikey turned hopeful eyes on him. I mean, I don't want him to be dead either, right? But the thing is, you knew about Pete before any of us. You knew what was happening to him had something to do with the shows. You knew to tell Gerard when, you know, at the beginning, when it was me in trouble.
Well, Mikey took his glasses off. He polished them on the hem of his shirt, then put them back on.
I guess.
I'm saying it's good enough for me, Frank said firmly. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I find the working theory, Gerard's not dead, way more motivating than the other one.
Me too, Bob said, raising his hand like he was in class. Brian kind of rolled his eyes.
Look, he huffed. Me three, obviously. I just don't want you to get your hopes up for nothing.
It's not nothing, Mikey insisted. Brian, it isn't.
It's not stupid either, Ray told him. People wake up in morgues and then wander off all the time.
Bob raised an eyebrow. All the time?
Ray flushed.
Well, on the Discovery Channel. And it's not like there isn't a precedent for this within the church.
Right, Bob said slowly. But the other dude it happened to was Jesus. Gerard's a nice dude and all, but I don't think he can walk on water or kill trees with his mind.
Guys, Brian said impatiently, come on, we need to focus. Let's assume that Gerard was drained of his life force to the point where it seemed like he was dead, okay? No pulse, he wasn't breathing. It could be like Ray says, that he woke up in a coffin, freaked out, and maybe he's holed up somewhere because... I don't know, he has amnesia or something. That doesn't explain how he managed to escape when the coffin was never unattended, and it also doesn't explain how none of the Cardinal's guys have been able to find him. They must know every inch of this place.
Apparently they don't know there's a bloodthirsty maniac trimming the verge, Frank pointed out.
You know what sucks the most, Mikey said suddenly, is that if Gerard were here, he'd figure this all out in like 30 seconds. He'd be all,
oh, well, back in the 3rd century, this exact thing happened to a pig farmer in Eastern Europe. Let me just look up the manuscript some monks illuminated to commemorate the occasion, and then he'd find it, and he'd know what to do.
Frank couldn't help smiling, just because that was exactly what Gerard would do. And now Mikey thought he was alive, and that meant there was a chance they might get to see him do it again, see him pacing around with his hands in his hair, making it all stand up crazily on end, or hunched over his books, muttering to himself and getting ink all over his hands. Whatever Brian said, it was way too late. Frank's hopes were up, and they were going to stay that way until someone could prove Mikey wrong. He looked up to see Mikey's mouth curled up at the corners, too.
It's so frustrating, Brian was saying, leafing through a notebook that was filled with Gerard's barely legible scrawl. They must have more reference books here than we could even dream of, but we have no way of getting at them.
Ray nodded. And we probably wouldn't even know where to start if we could.
A little while later, Mikey caught Frank's hand and tugged him into the other room. I would have told you first, he said apologetically when he'd pushed the door shut. I thought you would follow me in here.
It's okay, Frank squeezed Mikey's hand. I think Ray wanted to, so...
Mikey rolled his eyes. I don't need you to fix me up with Toro, dude.
I'm not, Frank protested. His hand was aching a little from punching Luke. He looked down at it and flexed it.
Sometimes, said Mikey, grabbing it and using it to pull Frank to sit down on the bed. I wish that your first instinct wasn't always to punch things that are pissing you off.
He deserved it.
Mikey rubbed the pads of his thumbs between Frank's sore knuckles. But he could have hurt you. You might not have come back.
But I did, Frank reminded him.
Mikey just shook his head. Frank said, Do you really think he's alive?
Mikey didn't say anything, but he looked up so Frank could see his face, and that was all the answer Frank needed. Frank didn't want to wait for dinner. He wanted to go and confront the Cardinal right away, but Brian said no. "I want to get to the bottom of this just as much as you," he said when Frank got mad at him. "But the Cardinal is our only hope of getting any answers, and if Mikey's right about Gerard, I'd say we're really going to need his help. Yelling at him isn't going to endear us to him." He wouldn't budge either, and Frank was climbing the walls by the time Antonio came to collect them again. He jittered all the way to the Cardinal's rooms and sat there seething while dinner was served and they waited for the Cardinal to make an appearance, and by the time the Cardinal had greeted them and taken his seat, he couldn't take it anymore. "So," he said casually, "you want to tell me why the dude who tried to kill me is working here?" The expression on the Cardinal's face was pure surprise, and Frank wasn't prepared for that. He just kept his gaze steady, though, and when the Cardinal asked him to repeat himself, he said, "Luke, old guy, long hair, gave me stigmata. Any of this ringing a bell? Because I just ran into him clipping your fucking bushes outside, and I'd really like to know why he doesn't seem to have any memory of trying to murder me." The Cardinal had gone pale, and he passed a hand over his mouth, sitting back in his chair. "I'm very sorry," he said sincerely. "You should never have... He should not have been somewhere you might come across him. That was a grievous error on our part. I apologize." Bob frowned. "An error? Why is he here at all?" The Cardinal looked confused. "Father Wei didn't explain the rehabilitation process to you?" "No," Frank gritted. "He said he couldn't." "I see." The Cardinal was quiet for a second. Frank squirmed in his seat, trying hard not to just scream at the dude until he told him what the fuck was happening. Finally, the Cardinal went on. "I see I underestimated his discretion." Mikey cleared his throat. "Please," he said quietly, "tell me what's going on." The Cardinal gave him a sad look, then leaned forward and set his arms on the table. "The individuals who come to us through people like Father Wei and yourselves cannot be dealt with by traditional methods. In most cases, the police would be powerless even if they could get past their disbelief." "Which is why you send those guys," Brian put in, "the suits." The Cardinal smiled a little bit. "That's not what we call them, but yes. They escort the perpetrators here, and we decide what's to be done with them."
"Like making them part of your ground staff?" Frank said incredulously.
"The vast majority of the people who come to us this way are psychologically disturbed," the Cardinal went on, holding up a hand to ask Frank to wait. "Sometimes severely. In these cases, we arrange psychiatric help for them. Sometimes there's only so much we can do, but best case scenario, with treatment and support, they can be released, start living real lives again. Others, although this is more rare, are legitimately under the thrall of outside influences."
Ray frowned. "Like what?"
"Demon possession," the Cardinal clarified. "In those cases, we seek approval for an exorcism, and again, with support, most of these individuals can be released."
"Most?" Brian frowned. "So which category does Luke fall under?"
The Cardinal leaned back, steepling his fingers under his chin. "Sometimes an individual does not feel ready to face the outside world for a long time, if ever. Sometimes they are concerned that they might reoffend, for example. I am sure," he said archly, his eyes flickering over to Frank, "that you would not wish for Luke to harm anyone else."
"Of course," Frank said hotly, "but why isn't he locked the fuck up?"
"This is the City of God," the Cardinal said, "not a prison. It is enough that we circumvent the outside world's methods of keeping order. We cannot offer people like Luke a legal trial, a jury of his peers, a chance for parole. To be locked up forever with no hope of release is a terrible punishment, and not one that the Church is willing to mete out."
"So you put him on the payroll instead?"
Frank didn't understand any of it.
"And why doesn't he remember me?"
"You did something," Ray said suddenly, looking at the Cardinal. "Like Howard and his guys did to the kids at the show. You did something so Luke wouldn't remember."
The Cardinal hesitated,
then got up from the table and went to stand in front of the window, facing away from them. His hands were clasped behind his back. He said, "We are sometimes forced to take extreme measures when large numbers of the public are involved, to keep them safe. Confusion, nothing more, but we do not take away people's memories." Bob shook his head. "So what, you brainwashed him?" "No," the cardinal sighed. "Luke's mind was damaged during his exorcism. It is an extremely dangerous rite for the possessed individual and the priests involved, and it takes enormous mental and emotional strength to come through it unscathed, strength which Luke unfortunately did not have in the end. Whether he truly does not remember or he simply forces himself not to, I cannot say. But what is beyond doubt is that his past actions harmed nobody more than himself in the end." He turned around to face them. "Luke lives here with us now. He lives a quiet life. He harms nobody. He is not the same person he was when he tried to hurt you. You saw that for yourself." "So what you're saying is that he gets to live here in a nice quiet job and never even has to remember what he did," Frank said slowly, "and I have to spend the rest of my life having nightmares every time I go to sleep, not to mention being all scarred up to shit." The other guys were all tense, on the edge of their seats. The cardinal didn't say anything. "I have to live with that," Frank pushed him, clenching his fists, "and he doesn't even have to remember? Is that what you're telling me?" "We can't force him to confront the memory of his sins," the cardinal said, spreading his hands. "If he cannot remember, then he cannot repent. Therefore, he cannot truly be forgiven, and that is punishment enough in itself. Frank, you must understand, allowing him to stay here with us is the best way to keep you safe."
"You haven't done shit to keep me safe," Frank yelled, losing his temper. "Not me, not any of us, not Gerard. You couldn't even keep his body safe. Don't talk to me like you know what's best."
The cardinal threw Brian a look, but Brian just kind of shrugged in Frank's direction. "No disrespect, Your Eminence, but he's got a point."
"You know what? Fuck this," Frank said, shoving out of his chair, which squeaked loudly against the floor. "I've had it up to here with your fucking church and all your bullshit. Why don't you let me know when you're ready to give us some fucking answers, all right?"
He slammed out of the room, ignoring the calls of his name, and hurried blindly through the hallways, down flights of stairs, until he found a fucking door, thank God, and just took off running. He had no idea where he was going, and he didn't care. He just needed to move, to get the fuck away from that place. He relished the burn in his lungs and the ache that sprang up almost immediately in his side and his legs, and pushed through it, the pain only spurring him on. He knew the others had followed him, he could hear them close behind, and he turned corners and doubled back whenever he could, trying to lose them, trying to get away. He didn't want to think or talk or anything anymore, he just wanted to be left the fuck alone. He rounded a corner, skidding slightly on the cobbles below his feet, and immediately collided with someone on the other side. Before he had time to snarl an apology, the person grabbed him roughly by the collar, and Frank saw, to his horror, that it was one of the hooded figures who'd been involved with the attack on Pete. "What the fuck?" Frank said, and then went crashing down onto the floor when a fist collided with his face. "Frank!" Brian yelled, skidding around the corner, and then said, "Motherfuckers!" And then the hooded figures were fucking everywhere, laying into Frank and the others like they were possessed or something.
"What do you want?" Ray demanded, dodging before he got a foot to the face.
"Where is he?" the guy holding Mikey demanded, his voice strangely distorted through the hood that still covered his face. "Where is he?"
"Where's who?"
Frank tried to ask, and got a punch in the stomach for his trouble. He doubled over, wheezing, then launched himself forward, putting all his weight behind it and jamming his shoulder into the guy's midriff as hard as he could. The guy went over backwards, and Frank followed him, scrambling on top. He grabbed for the hood, intent on pulling it off and exposing the guy's face, but the guy fought him, struggling violently, trying to roll them over.
"Frank, you good?"
Bob shouted, and Frank glanced over to see him doing the same thing, struggling to avoid the guy's hands where they were grasping at Bob's throat. Ray and Brian were still on their feet, but Frank couldn't see.
"Mikey!"
he yelled, hurling himself off the guy on the ground, and racing over to where Mikey was on his knees, his face bloody, his hands held protectively over his head. The guy standing over him had his fist raised, and Frank threw himself up and grabbed it, yanking his arm down behind his back until he heard the crack and the guy howled, his knees giving out under the pain. The guy Frank had been fighting before caught up with him, only to be pulled back at the last minute by Ray, who threw him against the wall, knocking the guy's head back hard. "What do you want?" Ray demanded, his hands opening and closing in fists by his side. "Who are you looking for?"
"The Resurrected," the guy said, trying and failing to get past Ray. "Where is the Resurrected?"
"We don't know what the fuck you're talking about," Brian shouted, and then there was a huge rumbling sound like thunder, and a flash of light so bright Frank had to let go of his guy to clap his hands over his eyes. When he peered out through his fingers, the hooded men were on the ground, dead or unconscious or something. Frank didn't care. And in the middle of the alley was a man in black, with his back to them. His hands were outstretched in front of him. Frank could see his fingers spread. He was standing straight, but he wobbled slightly when he turned around to face them. It was Gerard. Nobody moved. Frank didn't even breathe or blink. He didn't know if he could. He didn't know what to do. He only knew it was Gerard. Gerard blinked slowly. He took two tiny, faltering steps forward, his hands slowly coming back down by his side. "Mikey?" he said, and then he collapsed, his body giving way just like it had when he died, only this time Bob was there to catch him. "Quickly," he said, scooping Gerard up. "Let's get him back to the Vatican before these assholes wake up again." He started moving, only to stop when Mikey said, "Bob!" shrilly, wringing his hands in front of him. "Bob, is he? "He's alive, Mikey," Bob confirmed, and Mikey staggered in place, rubbing his hands over his face. Ray went to him, steadied him, and got him moving. "Come on, we don't have much time." "Should we try to find a cab?" Brian wondered. "We can't just walk back into the Vatican with him, can we?" "That won't be necessary," said a voice, and Frank looked up to see Howard and the rest of the suits standing there, sunglasses in place, despite the darkness. Howard didn't look remotely surprised to see Gerard, but maybe that was part of his training. "There are cars waiting." "What about these guys?" Frank said, indicating the hooded men who were starting to stir. "The hood guys." One of the other suits, the little one with the ponytail, smiled grimly. "Don't worry," he said, taking out a pair of black leather gloves. He tugged them on and flexed his knuckles. "They'll be taken care of." Howard started to usher them away, but before they left, Frank darted down and picked up Mikey's glasses where they were lying on the floor. The arms were wobbly, and one of the lenses was covered in blood, but Frank put them in his pocket for safekeeping. "Okay," he said, and followed Howard to the car. "I kind of thought that he'd be naked," Mikey said. Frank looked over. Mikey was chewing his thumbnail, eyes fixed on the Vatican doctor who was moving quietly around the bed. "You know," Mikey went on, "like Angel, or the Cylons?" Frank nodded slowly. "Or the Terminator." Mikey laughed suddenly, then stopped, then started again, giggling helplessly. He leaned heavily against Frank's side and wheezed. "The Terminator isn't dead, you dumb shit. It's time travel." Frank didn't know why it was funny, but it was. It was the funniest fucking thing he'd ever heard in his life, and he laughed too, trying to keep it down and avoid the suspicious glances from the doctor. He turned his face into Mikey's shoulder to muffle the sound. He could feel Mikey shaking with laughter, both of them struggling for composure and breath. "The Terminator," Mikey hacked out, and Frank lost it completely, clinging to Mikey and laughing until he felt weak all over. "Frank," Mikey giggled. "Frank, he's alive." "I know," Frank sniggered, flattening his hands over his stomach in an effort to calm down.
"Guys," Brian hissed, "keep it together for fuck's sake."
He was using his sternest voice, but it only made Frank laugh harder. "He seems to be unharmed," the doctor said, and Frank managed to calm down enough to listen to him. "If he doesn't regain consciousness in the next 12 hours, we'll run some more tests." "For what?" Brian wanted to know. The best thing you can do for him now is let him rest, the doctor went on, avoiding the question. He indicated the two nuns who were assisting. The sisters will take good care of him.
Not going to happen, Mikey said immediately. The doctor frowned. He would really be best if...
He said he's staying, Frank interrupted, meeting the doctor's eyes, and so are the rest of us.
It's all right, Vincent, said the cardinal, appearing suddenly in the doorway. Let them stay.
But, the doctor protested, only to be silenced by a wave of the cardinal's hand. They are Father Wei's closest companions. It can only do him good to have them here when he wakes.
Ray looked up. So you think he will wake up?
I certainly hope so. I think everyone here has questions they would like answered.
Personally, Frank didn't care if Gerard couldn't answer a single one, as long as he woke up. He bit his tongue, though. He just didn't trust the cardinal at all. He seemed like he was on their side, sort of, but after everything that happened with Luke, Frank just wasn't sure. He did convince the nurses that they should stay just outside the room instead of in, though, which Frank was grateful for. As soon as the door closed behind them, Mikey was up and on the bed with Gerard, touching him anxiously, his hand, his face. Should we try to wake him?
I don't think so, said Ray. I mean, sleep is the way the body heals itself, right?
But the doctor said his body's fine, Mikey protested, laying his hands on Gerard's shoulders. If it was me, I'd want him to wake me up.
Brian shook his head. If he didn't wake up from getting transported back here and put into bed and prodded by the doctors, and you two, he indicated Frank, doing your best impressions of hyenas, then he probably isn't ready. Mikey didn't look convinced, but he settled back a little, propping himself on one elbow to watch Gerard's face. I'm glad I didn't call my mom, he said. Frank knew Brian and Ray were right, that it was best to leave Gerard to sleep. But it was excruciating waiting for him to wake up. He was right there, looking exactly the same as before, except maybe he was a little paler than usual. It was his face and his hands, and more than anything, Frank wanted him to wake up so they could hear his voice. At the same time, though, he was scared of what might happen. They didn't know where Gerard had been, what had happened to him, if he was going to be the same person as he was before he died. Plus, somewhere really deep down, Frank was worried Gerard might still be mad at him. God knew Frank was mad at Gerard. He was fucking furious. The fury that comes after the initial stomach-flipping high of intense relief. He didn't trust himself not to punch Gerard in the face, or kiss him, or both, and neither was anything other than a terrible idea. He wrapped his fingers firmly around the arms of his chair and promised himself he'd stay in it until he knew he could keep it together. Time seemed to stretch out while they waited. There was nothing to say, so they didn't speak, just sat and watched Gerard sleep. He was so still and silent, and he looked smaller than Frank remembered, although that was probably just the giant bed, the vast expanse of white sheets. Frank's mom always said everybody looked smaller on white sheets, and she should know. She'd racked up enough hours sitting by hospital beds with Frank. He was thinking about how much hospital food sucked when Gerard made a noise, a cough or something, and Mikey sat up, leaning over him. Gerard, he said, stroking Gerard's hair gently away from his face. Gerard, can you hear me? Nobody moved for an endless second. And then Gerard stirred, opening his eyes and blinking up at Mikey.
Mikey, he said, clearing his throat when his voice came out all scratchy. Are you... Where's Pete?
What? Mikey shook his head. Gerard started trying to sit up, and Mikey helped him, pulling him upright.
Did it work? Is Pete okay?
Mikey just shook his head again, then made a strangled noise and threw himself at Gerard, wrapping his arms around him and rocking him back and forth.
Thank God, he said, muffled in Gerard's shoulder. You're okay, you're okay, you're okay.
Over Mikey's shoulder, Gerard looked completely baffled. He hugged Mikey back and said, I'm fine, Mikey. I'm sorry if I scared you.
Scared me?
Mikey held Gerard out at arm's length and shook him a little. You were dead, you giant asshole.
What?
Gerard kind of smiled, like he thought Mikey was playing a trick. Then the smile faded as he looked around the room, took in his surroundings, and the rest of them staring at him.
What? Are we at the Vatican?
Frank's ears started ringing as Mikey explained what had happened to Gerard. He could see Gerard's face, see the confusion and the disbelief written there. See Mikey shaking his head and laying his hands on Gerard's arms, insisting, but he couldn't hear what was being said. All he could do was stare, even when Gerard pushed the covers back and, with Mikey's help, got out of the bed to stand on his own 2 feet. "This is really weird," he said, looking around the room. This is really weird." Suddenly Bob pushed away from the corner he'd been standing in and grabbed Gerard up in a hug, almost pulling him off his feet. Gerard disappeared from view behind Bob's shoulder, but Frank saw his hand pat Bob's back tentatively when Bob said, muffled, "Don't do that. Don't do that, okay?"
"Okay," Gerard promised, clearly bewildered.
Bob let him go after a minute, and Gerard got hugged by Ray and Brian as well, getting more and more flustered. His hands were jittering around all over the place, and his cheeks were flushed by the time Brian let him go. There was a moment's silence, and Gerard looked over to Frank. His eyes widened, like he hadn't expected Frank to be there, and he took a couple of steps forward. "Frank?" Frank was still sitting in his chair. His hands were still wrapped tightly around the arms. The skin over his knuckles, when he looked at it, had gone white, and he could feel the grooves in the wood digging painfully into his palms. But he couldn't make himself let go yet. Gerard shifted uncertainly from foot to foot. "I'm glad you're okay," he offered timidly. Frank made a noise that he couldn't have classified if you'd paid him, halfway between a laugh and a bark, and stood up involuntarily. His hands were shaking now he'd let go of the chair, and he clenched them into fists, hiding them from view. "You stupid motherfucker," he heard himself say, in a voice that shook and seemed far, far away. "You asshole! I told you I had it covered!"
"But I couldn't let anything happen to you," Gerard said anxiously, taking another step towards Frank and then stopping, his hands hanging limply by his sides. "Frankie!"
"Don't you think I felt the same?" Frank demanded. His face felt hot, and he knew he was shaking all over. He wished the others would leave, or look away, or something. He felt stripped open and exposed. There was too much feeling inside him, and he didn't know what to do with it all. He was being pulled in 1,000 directions, like his body wasn't under his control, and he had to stay still because he didn't know what it was going to do next. He felt something on the back of his hand. He looked down, and it was Gerard's fingers, resting lightly there. He looked up again and saw Gerard's face, closer this time, his forehead furrowed and his mouth turned down at the corners in a worried, pursed-up frown. "You're still angry with me," he said, and then Frank didn't know what happened, but the next thing he knew, he had wrapped Gerard up in his arms and was hugging him so tight it probably hurt. Gerard didn't seem to mind, though. He hugged back and let Frank cling to him, let him bury his face against Gerard's throat. It hurt not to kiss him. It physically hurt. But Frank wasn't going to ask for that anymore. He'd made a promise. So he just rocked Gerard back and forth a little bit and squeezed him tighter. "I'm sorry," he said, quietly, so only Gerard would hear. "I wanted to tell you that I was sorry."
"Me too," Gerard said. He touched the back of Frank's neck. "I'm just glad that you're all right."
"I'm not," Frank thought, but he didn't say that. He just took deep breaths and lifted his head a little. When he opened his eyes, all he saw was the wall. The other guys were behind him, he realized, so he pressed his cheek against Gerard's and hid a secret kiss in his hair, back behind his ear where nobody would ever find it.
"We should tell the doctor you're awake," Brian said when Frank finally managed to let go. "I'll ask the sisters to call him."
The doctor ordered all of them outside except Mikey while he was examining Gerard. When he went away muttering and let them back in, Frank immediately told Gerard about running into Luke.
"And the cardinal said you knew," he remembered suddenly. "Is that true?"
Gerard looked intensely uncomfortable. He fidgeted with his collar and his sleeves before admitting, "I knew."
And you didn't tell us?
Frank raised his voice. He couldn't help it. He was so mad. Gerard, what the fuck?
I can't tell you everything, Frank.
Gerard raised his voice in return.
You know that. And what good would it have done for you to know? It's not like I ever thought you were going to come over here, is it?
Tell them what the Cardinal said. Mikey interrupted suddenly, his voice tight with anger. Frank looked at him and noticed that he was so pale he was almost gray. Tell them what he said when they were out of the room.
Frank frowned.
What did he say?
Gerard shook his head. Mikey, this isn't the time. Let me talk to him and then...
What did he say? Frank demanded. Gerard hesitated, then sighed and rubbed his face with both hands.
He said you guys have to go home, he said tiredly. He said I can't work with you anymore.
Frank had been expecting that since day one. He'd always known it would happen. But that didn't stop it feeling like a kick to the guts. He said, oh, well, of course. And then turned around and slammed his fist against the wall as hard as he could. Fuck this place, seriously.
Seconded, Bob agreed.
Ray leaned forward, looking troubled.
What are you going to do?
What do you think he's going to do, Ray? Mikey snapped. He has to do what they tell him.
Why?
Frank burst out, spinning around to look at Gerard again.
Why can't we just leave, all of us together? What are they going to do, arrest you?
They could dismiss me, Gerard said quietly.
Frank bit his tongue as hard as he could, so he wouldn't say, good. He threw himself back into his chair and folded his arms, waiting for Gerard to tell them to get out.
But I think you're right.
Frank's head snapped up to see the others gaping at Gerard.
Excuse me?
After everything that went down, I don't feel right just sending you guys away. What if those guys in the hoods come after you again?
Gerard shook his head, his jaw set firmly.
I'm not going to just abandon you. That's not right.
Brian stood up and jittered a little in place, ready to do something practical. What do you want to do?
I don't want to stay here without you, Gerard said slowly. Maybe if we can get out of here just long enough to figure out what's going on, and then I can talk to the Cardinal again and make him see that he's being unreasonable.
Ray frowned. How can we figure out what's going on if we're not here? He said. Gee, this is crazy. We need to talk to the Cardinal now.
He's not going to tell us shit, Frank argued.
But how will we even get out? Ray waved his hands. They must have guards and shit.
He's not under arrest, Brian said.
Ray rolled his eyes. I know that, but do you think they're just going to let him walk out of here when he just recently returned from the dead?
I know a way out, Gerard said. It's not exactly scenic, but it'll work.
Bob scowled. See, we have to fucking jailbreak. I said we were prisoners. I said.
Ray sighed.
We're not prisoners, Bob. Don't be such a drama queen.
The bickering continued. Frank tuned them out and focused his attention on Mikey, who was sitting close to Gerard, looking carefully at his face.
Do you think this is the right thing to do? He said quietly, holding Gerard's hand. You wouldn't rather stay and talk to them?
I'm sure, said Gerard.
Mikey's forehead creased. It just doesn't seem like you. Frank held his breath. They were so close, and if Mikey talked Gerard into changing his mind now...
You'd know, Gerard said, covering Mikey's hand with both of his own. You'd know if it wasn't me.
Mikey's face cleared and he sat back a little.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, I would.
But I don't... Shit, I don't have my fucking passport, Gerard said, agitated.
Said Brian, raising his hand. I do.
Everyone stared at him.
What?
Brian said, shifting uncomfortably. I just thought... Just in case, you know.
Gerard smiled and shook his head. I love you.
Yeah, well... Brian cleared his throat and said gruffly, Let's see if you still love me after I try to explain why there's no record of the passport in question being used to get you into the country in the first place.
Nobody tried to stop them on their way to the airport.
Frank kept expecting it, that a suit would pop out and demand to ask where they were going,
or an alarm would sound when they stepped over Vatican City limits, or that the Swiss Guard would suddenly appear in the rear view on the cab ride to the airport. None of that happened, though. What did happen was that Brian tried to spin the airport guys an elaborate lie about a missing computer record, and they pretty obviously did not believe a fucking word of it, and they took Gerard off to a room somewhere and wouldn't let them go with him. "This is fucking insane," Brian said, pacing up the same 6-foot area he'd been patrolling ever since they took Gerard away. "This is crazy. They're probably on the phone to the Cardinal right now. He's going to show up any second."
"Shut up," Frank hissed at him. "Don't even say it."
Next to him, Mikey was jiggling his knee nervously up and down. "He's right, though. We should have stayed." "For what? For the Cardinal to throw us out and never let us see Gerard again? Fuck that." "He didn't say we couldn't see him," Mikey pointed out. "He said we couldn't work with him." "Yeah, well," Frank drummed his hands against his knees. "All I know is, there's no way we're leaving him there alone. God knows what they could do to him, Mikey. What if he ends up like Luke?" Mikey made a face. "Why would he? They don't need to exorcise him." Frank shook his head. "We're not leaving without him. If they take him back, then we'll just have to find out a way to get back in, okay? It's all of us or none of us." "I'd say we're about to find out which," said Brian. Frank looked up to see Gerard coming toward them. He was pale, but he wasn't flanked by any security guys, and when he reached them, he waved his hand that had a boarding pass in it. "You're kidding," Brian gaped. "I didn't think it would actually work."
"Yeah."
Gerard looked over his shoulder, frowning. "I don't really know how it happened, to be honest." "Who cares?" said Frank, shouldering his bag. "Let's just get on the fucking plane before they change their minds." They were even sitting together, in two sets of 3 seats either side of the aisle. "Pete's having our things shipped to Craig's place," Brian informed them, after he returned from a furtive trip to use his cell in the bathroom. "And Craig's sending cars to pick us up at the airport." "Life is so much easier when you know rich people," Bob observed. Ray waited for Brian to sit down and belt himself in, then said, "You know you're not supposed to use your cell on flights." Bob rolled his eyes, then covered them with a sleep mask he'd found somewhere. "That's just because they can't figure out how to charge you when you're not technically in anyone's network area."
"It's because it might crash the plane," Ray argued.
"It's a plane, Toro," Bob said, pulling his blue airline blanket up to his chin. "It flies, in the air, with people inside it. If it can't withstand somebody using a cell phone, then frankly, I think we have bigger problems to worry about than a slap on the wrist from the stewardess." Frank snorted a laugh and sat back in his seat. He had the aisle seat, for once, which never happened, but Mikey had decided he wanted the window. Gerard was between them, and his elbow kept poking Frank in the arm whenever he scratched his neck, which was a lot. "Dude," said Frank, "you okay?" Gerard made a face.
"Yeah, just an itch." He dropped his hands and rubbed them anxiously against his knees. "This is a really bad idea."
Mikey looked at him. "What is?"
"This."
Gerard waved a hand around. "Running away." "But you wanted to."
"I know." Gerard scratched his neck again. "I don't know what I was thinking. I'm going to call the Cardinal as soon as we land."
"You can use my cell if you want," Brian offered from across the aisle. "Bathroom's free." Gerard scrunched his nose up. "I don't think priests are supposed to break airline rules."
"You see?"
Ray hissed at Bob, who just swatted at him like he was a bug.
"I'll just tell him my head's all messed up after what happened," Gerard went on, digging his fingers right down inside his collar and making a face. "He's a good man. He'll understand. Damn it."
Gerard ripped his collar off and yanked the top few buttons on his shirt open, spreading his palm against the skin on his neck.
"What the fuck? I feel like I'm on fire."
Frank and Mikey both leaned in to look. The skin around Gerard's neck and collarbone was angry and red, raw where he'd been scratching at it. Frank winced, and Mikey made a sympathetic hissing noise. "It's really red. Try to stop scratching."
"It itches," Gerard complained, rolling his head around and hitching his shoulders up. "Like poison ivy or something."
Ray rummaged in his bag, stowed safely under the seat in front of him, of course.
and leaned over the aisle to pass Frank a small tub. "Try this." Frank turned it over in his hands before passing it to Gerard. "You have a magic potion for everything?" Ray snorted. "It's vitamin E cream, dude." Gerard opened it and scooped some out with his fingers, rubbing it onto the skin. "Ow," he said, frowning. "Wait, hold this." He shoved the open tub at Frank, then lifted his hands and fiddled at the back of his neck for a moment, finally undoing the gold chain he wore around his neck. He kissed the cross on the end quickly, then wrapped it up and put it in his top pocket. "Okay," he said, and took the lotion back, rubbing some more in. "Thanks, Ray. That's actually better."
"Guess you're allergic to Vatican fabric softener," Mikey said.
Gerard smiled lopsidedly. He buttoned his shirt all the way back up to the top. "I guess." He looked really strange, Frank thought, in the stiff black shirt, but no collar. Frank dug in his pocket and reluctantly offered him the rosary. "Do you want this back?" Gerard's eyes lit up when he saw it, and he did put his hand out, but then stopped and instead folded Frank's own fingers in so he was holding the rosary tight in his palm. "I gave it to you," he said. Frank nodded and put it away again. His face felt hot, and his throat was dry all of a sudden. He looked at the floor. They couldn't really talk on the plane, any of them. It wasn't a night flight, and most people were awake and would definitely notice if they started talking about hooded dudes with magic balls and whether or not the Vatican wanted them dead. Mostly, they all just sat there catching each other's eyes awkwardly until they landed. And then there was the airport to deal with more anxiety over whether or not Gerard would be able to sweet-talk the U.S. immigration officials as easily as the ones in Rome.
"Easier, apparently," Bob observed, when Gerard came towards them after seriously only 5 minutes.
"How are you doing it?" Ray wanted to know, shaking his head. "My uncle was once turned away because they thought he looked shifty, and you're making them all fall in love with you and hand-wave a non-existing outgoing trip?" "I don't know," Gerard said, looking equally mystified. "Maybe I just have an honest face." Craig hadn't sent cars to pick them up. He'd sent a giant fucking van with hilarious blacked-out windows. Which was awesome as far as Frank was concerned, because it meant they all got to stay together. And when they pulled into the driveway, which might as well have been a parking lot, Frank wondered for the billionth time exactly how rich Craig was. Craig came to meet them, waving his gangly arms and smiling his creepy big smile. "Quickly, quickly inside," he urged them. "My guys will get your bags. Come on."
"We can't thank you enough for this," Brian said as Craig showed them into the house.
"We really appreciate it," Gerard agreed, reaching over to shake Craig's hand. Craig brought his other hand up to cover Gerard's and pumped both of his arms up and down energetically.
"No problem, really, anything I can do to help. I'm just glad you're okay. Brian said you died?"
Said Gerard, looking around shiftily. Craig just kept beaming at him expectantly until Gerard said, "I guess."
"Awesome," said Craig. Then, when Gerard's eyes bugged out, he hurriedly clarified, "Not that you died, but I mean that you came back. What was that even like?"
"We're really grateful to you, Craig," Brian cut in smoothly, "and I'm sure the father will be more than happy to answer all your questions later. But if you don't mind, it was a long flight and he's been through a lot. You understand."
"Oh!" Craig dropped Gerard's hand and laughed a little, shaking his head.
"Of course, of course. Here, let me show you to your rooms." Their rooms actually turned out to be their floor, as in an entire floor of Craig's house.
"I thought you'd be more comfortable if you could all stay close together," Craig said, opening the door to yet another huge bedroom.
"Oh, and I wanted you to have your privacy, so I gave the staff some paid leave. You can stay as long as you need to."
"Jesus Christ," Ray said quietly. "The size of this place."
"I don't remember it being this big when we were here before," Bob frowned.
"Well, you only really saw the upper portion that time," Craig said casually. "It's really far too big for me, this place, but it has such great views, I just fell in love. Plus, I always wanted an orchard, and I have my own creek, too, set right into the grounds."
Frank raised an eyebrow. "You have a football field, too?"
"No," Craig said sadly. Then he perked up.
but I do have some caves if you're into spelunking.